Hello, and welcome to another inspiring episode of the Charge Forward podcast, where today we dive deep into the journey of an entrepreneur who leads with a servant mindset. I'm your host, James Belasco, and today I have a truly special guest joining us. Our guest today is Sophia McLarnon, the executive director and visionary behind the Dancer Movement. Sophia has dedicated her life to empowering others through the art of dance, creating a community where everyone can express themselves and grow. Her passion for serving others and her innovative approach to entrepreneurship make her a perfect fit for the Charge Forward podcast. In this episode, we're going to explore Sophia's journey, the challenges she's faced, and the incredible impact she's making in the world of dance and beyond. Whether you're an aspiring entrepreneur or simply want to listen to an inspirational story, Sophia's story is sure to motivate and uplift you, and we're excited to have her here. So without further ado, let's charge forward and welcome Sophia to the Charge Forward podcast.
Awesome. Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
So I wanted to get started by, first of all, allowing you to tell everybody what the Dancer Movement is and how your history with dance and childhood education kind of steered you in the direction of starting this unique business.
Yeah. So the Dancer Movement, essentially, I like to just tell people we just want everybody to dance. Our mission is accessible dance for people of all ages and abilities. And I say dance because I'm a dancer, but even just movement at a very basic level. All people should move, and we're going to help people do that. So I was a dancer my whole life, trained very classically in ballet, moved to New York City to go to Marymount Manhattan College as a dance major, and I graduated in February of 2020. So I was quite literally 1 month before COVID shut everything down in New York City. I wanted to perform. I never wanted to teach. And then that didn't happen for 3 years. And kind of in this in-between floating world, I had a really good friend who had MS, multiple sclerosis. And she was also a dancer at one point in her life. And at some point we were talking and I said, we should take a dance class together. And she was like, I can't. Dance classes aren't accessible to me. I don't feel comfortable. I don't feel safe. And I just started Googling because I was like, this can't be true. We are in New York City. There's a dance class somewhere where people with disabilities can go dance, and I didn't find one. So I was like, well, I guess I'm doing that because that's kind of crazy. And so we really started in the disability sphere, and we were doing that for really 2 years. And then I started working in early childhood as a movement specialist. And so I've kind of also developed this part of the Dancer Movement that is helping kids of all levels and ages and abilities get access to dance as well.
That's an amazing story. And like a true entrepreneur, you found, you know, something that folks needed, and you kind of filled that void. And that's really special, especially in this case. So what would you say is the key mission? I mean, there's a lot, and you just described the many different ways that you can help people and inspire people. But what would you say is the key mission that you work towards every day?
I think I like to think of the phrase movement is medicine, because that's a phrase people hear all the time. And I think a lot of people think of it as, oh, if I exercise, I'm healthy, which is obviously very true. But I think that what people don't realize is that movement and that connection of your brain to your body does so many things for humans that, like, we just don't explore. And so, like, at a very basic level, I just want everybody to move, whether that's alone in your living room with music or in a classroom setting or professionally or whatever it is. Like, humans need to move. The first thing that a baby does when they hear a song is start to dance. Like, it's the most basic form of human expression, and we kind of, like, lose that in life.
I didn't lose it. I just can't dance, but I do dance.
And
I am, I am one of those people that will dance around in their home when no one else is around, just listening to their favorite music. But it's a scary thing for me. But so tell me a little bit about the movement deck. So you have kind of a unique way to educate folks when they're beginning to get involved and to make it easy for them, especially kids. So how does that work?
Yeah, so the movement deck is a series of movement-based flashcards that I designed and developed. Essentially, it's what I'm using as a movement specialist in my preschool classrooms. I started with a pouch, like a purple pouch in my classes, because the kids were like, what's in the purple pouch? I brought like a mystery item, and then it became a thing that the kids wanted. And then I had to suddenly invent a million things to have in this purple pouch every class. And so I started just printing out pictures and laminating them at the preschool and sticking them in this pouch and pulling them out and being like, we're going to play a dance game with this. And then I started to realize, I was like, these are just I've made flashcards that anybody could do. Like, you don't have to be a movement specialist. And so that's where they came from. So they have different categories in them. They have like cues on the back so that any parent, any grown up at home can easily play these movement games. And it's just a different way to get kids moving, especially when they're really young.
And speaking of the kids and their parents, so you must get a lot of feedback from parents in particular. What is that like? What are the common things they tell you about their child once they get involved with the program?
The number one thing I hear parents say is, she likes to dance, but she doesn't want anyone to tell her what to do, which is exactly how I was when I was a kid. I was dancing all the time, and my mom tried to sign me up for class, and I was like, I don't need class. Like, I know how to dance, Mom. Like, I don't need a dance teacher. And the good thing about these cards is that it's a structured game, but it's meant to be child-led. So the children are supposed to be leading the creative part of it. There's no right or wrong answer. It's kind of just prompts that let them lead. And kids are creative. Kids know how to do stuff. Like, they're going to come up with the dance move, believe me. Like, they're going to do it. And so I've heard that a lot from parents, that it's a good way to guide them without kind of like forcing a move on them.
And what brings the parent or the child to decide to get involved with the dancer movement?
It really depends. We've had a lot of people come to us for our disability work, which is typically more adults, but I've had kids come because their parents are Googling, and we come up because there's not a lot of them. And then a lot of parents that are also teachers find the dancer movement, or find the movement deck, because they're looking for tools to use in their classroom. And then they also have kids, and they're like, oh my gosh, I can use this at home with my kids. So a lot of it comes through people that are in like an education community, because that's kind of where we're reaching.
Right. And you mentioned that you're working with individuals with disabilities, and I found that just totally fascinating and inspiring that you perform that kind of work. And I think that's what really, when I kicked off the show talking about, you know, giving back to the community and really making the world of dance available to everybody, I mean, that speaks volumes, that particular part of your program. Expand upon that and how that came to be, and, you know, what your goal with individuals and groups are in the disability side of things.
Yeah, like I said in the beginning, I have the friend with MS, and what really blew my mind was that as somebody who danced my whole life, I wasn't teaching at all at this point. Like, I honestly never taught a dance class. It seems so simple to me to adapt dance, again, because it comes back to the same thing with the kids. It's so natural for humans. You may be sitting in a wheelchair, but then you can use your arms, or maybe you can't use the left side of your body. You can blink your eyes. And so it frustrated me that it didn't exist, because I was like, this is too easy. It's not that hard. Why aren't people doing this? It's not even that difficult to adapt to. I'll have a class where somebody's in a wheelchair, somebody has MS, somebody has, you know, different sight abilities, like, and they'll all be together, and people are like, how do you adapt for everyone? And it's, dance is really about imagery, for me at least. So I always kind of start with an image, and I always say to my classes, we dance in our brains first, and anything that happens in our body is bonus. That's bonus points. If your right arm moves, great. But if you're thinking and you're envisioning this feeling and what dance is, then that's the point of it. And so that's really what a lot of my classes is, kind of this almost like this mind exercise that they get to do. And it's amazing.
It is, and you're right. I think we could all relate to what you're saying, because when we're driving in a car and listening to the radio or, you know, whatever, and that song comes on, and you really see yourself in your mind, right, yeah, dancing or doing something fun, but yet you're just doing 80 miles an hour down 95, and hopefully everything's good. So the folks you're working with, I mean, it's got to be very special to them, and it's got to be motivating to them, and really, really helping them. What kind of conversations do you have with each individual, you know, while you're doing this, or maybe after they've done it for some time?
Our clients, a lot of the times the people drawn to us danced at some point in their life, whether that was just when they were six in a dance class or professionally, and then they stopped. And so a lot of them, it's just like bringing them back to this very happy space, very happy memory. I mean, probably most people took a dance class at some point in their childhood. And so it's a little bit of, I hate to say normalcy because their lives are normal now, but just this something that they thought they couldn't do, something they thought the world didn't give them access to, something they did when they were six. And they get to kind of find this freedom, and it's an art form. The other great part of it that I tell people is there is no right or wrong answer in art. If I handed you all a piece of paper and told you to draw a flower, you would all draw it differently. And none of those are wrong. It's art. It's supposed to look different. Like, that's the beauty of it. That's the exciting part of it.
I could imagine the impact it has, not just physically for them, whether it's a form of, you know, release or physical, just general physical activity and exercising and getting out and being around other people, but it has to really help them, think about other things they can do, right? If they've accomplished something like this and they stretch themselves and they feel comfortable now with it and enjoy it, it's got to really impact other parts of their lives.
Absolutely. And a lot of so we teach our own classes, but then a lot of the things we do in the community is at larger events. And the really cool part for me is they're often events that are already there for people with disabilities. Like, we just worked with a company called Achilles. They were cycling, they were running, they do the New York City Marathon. And they were like, come teach a class after we run. And so these people are like doing all of these things that just, unfortunately, the world doesn't think of people with disabilities doing. So it's been very eye-opening for me too, kind of the reverse of that, of like all the things these people are already doing, and then I'm just another one. Oh yeah, we can dance. We're gonna dance. Sure, let's do it.
Right, let's run a marathon, and then we'll go to a dance party. And
like, I was like, they were like, can you teach an hour-long dance class after we've run and we're training for the marathon? And I was like, I'm exhausted just thinking about that.
that's incredible. From the business aspect of things, because it is a business, and I know it's a special business, but it's still business. And when we talk to entrepreneurs or other people that are starting businesses, and my family's had their own businesses and so forth, there's always challenges. There's always setbacks. What are some of the obstacles that you've been confronted with, and how did you overcome them to this point?
I think the biggest challenge for me that I didn't really see coming was how much I want to do this for like the good of people, and how much that doesn't bring in money to run a business. And a lot of people think that we're a nonprofit, which we are not. We do have a fiscal sponsor now, so we can fundraise a little bit, but for the first like 3 years, we were a corporation. We're operating based on what people are paying, and it's just one of those things people naturally assume is going to be cheap, is going to be free, is another nonprofit is going to partner with us and not pay us any money. And so like reminding myself as a business owner that yes, this is a good thing that we're doing, but it's also valuable, and we're bringing talent and time, and it's something people have to pay for. I'd love to be a nonprofit one day and have it free to participants, but it's still a dance class. Dance classes are expensive, which is another problem, but really getting people to kind of value that with their money and not just volunteering you know, a lot of the events we did were for a fundraiser. So they're expecting us to donate our time, which is great for the community, but it's not going to operate a business.
Right. Yeah. And that must be hard. So how do you end up positioning your business? Maybe we call it marketing your business, knowing that, you know, those are some of the objections or challenges that are put before you, and also knowing that, gosh, you just want to really go help and inspire people, right?
Yeah. I try to strike a balance. Like, we'll do free events. I try to look at it from a business perspective of, you know, how many people are going to be there? Are they then going to come take the class I teach that they're going to have to pay for? Like, is it worth our time to get this exposure? And then just really marketing it to people as a dance class. Yes, it's adaptive. But it's a special skill that I'm bringing to make it adaptive. And just like anything else, it's something that people have to pay for.
You know, I thought, you know, with all the effort you put in and the time you put in with the individuals, whether, you know, they're kids or adults, do you have plans, or have you thought about making plans about a show or a performance of some sort, you know, for the public that, you know, could involve all of these individuals?
We have. I put together a virtual performance piece. There's a Astoria dance festival that they do outside at like a beer garden around here where all the dance schools come and perform. And at the time, none of my clients were local, which is another thing, because we started during COVID, everything was on Zoom. Mm-hmm. But I did have each of them record the same dance in their house, and I put it together and made like a dance film that they showed at this dance festival. So we did do that, and that was just really cool for people to see. I don't think of myself as a choreographer, although I didn't think of myself as a teacher 4 years ago either. So right. I don't ever think about like, oh, I could put together a dance piece. I absolutely could. But yeah, I think it's good to show the community too, to show people that this is what we're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. But you just brought up a good point. From the business entrepreneurial side, you need to evolve, right? As mm-hmm. as a person, and you need to be open-minded. Has that been like one of the biggest learning experiences for you, that, you know, you start with one set of skills and a couple of years later you have 3, 4, 5 more sets of skills?
Completely. I mean, I say this out loud, it's okay. I know nothing about business. Like, I'm not a business person. I know how to teach a dance class. I know how to run an Instagram. But like, I was just actually talking to somebody today at work about how trying, when something is intimidating, it gets overwhelming, and then I just don't do it. And just trying to just, I don't know, make it up, write the business proposal, do the thing. There's a script somewhere in the world with AI, and like just kind of going for it and evolving, and then you learned in the process. But yes, it's been difficult to actually do that.
Yeah. So how do you end up staying motivated through all this learning and then educating folks on what you're doing, educating them why it's good for them, why they should invest money to do this, time to do it? You know, how do you keep the motivation? How do you keep going every day, looking forward towards, you know, the goal that you're trying to achieve?
I always said to everyone around me, it's like the moment I feel very defeated in this business, I teach a class or I meet one person that's like, you have no idea how impactful this was for me. And it's like magic. Like every time I get to that lowest, something amazing happens in the business. And so I think just putting myself into the community and teaching classes and being with kids and teaching those kids dance classes, like, I've never walked out of any dance class and thought like, oh, this is still really hard. I feel unmotivated. Like, that immediately motivates me.
Yeah, I could imagine. And you must have some folks around you that you lean on, whether they're personal or professional. Are there one or two that you could say, yeah, that's my go-to, you know, when I need an idea, when I need support, when I need to just, you know, celebrate a big victory? Who are these people that you go to?
Definitely Kelsey, my husband. He's also artistic, so we do a lot of leaning back and forth on each other. He just said to me 10 minutes ago, "I pumped you up the other day. You got to pump me up now." Like we do, like alternate our pep talks to each other. But also, like my parents are, they were just in here for a street festival. My dad was in the street, like selling like a madman. Like I mean, they're there no matter what it is I say I'm doing, and that's to have other people rooting for you makes it amazing.
Yeah, it does. Are there other peers in the dance community that you have, strong ties to that also give you feedback, maybe constructive feedback sometimes as well?
Actually the woman with MS, also, she doesn't care if I say her name, Julie, is she's in Colorado now, but she has started many businesses and helped a lot of nonprofits. And her husband really helped me get this going and continue to, she helped us write our business plan and she's constantly there with all the business questions. So she's definitely a business side. And I have a few really good friends still very connected in the dance world professionally that they dance. And it's always good to hear their feedback because they're connected in that world and they know what's happening. And when they're there to support it and be like, "Oh my God, I'm taking a picture of this. I'm putting it on my Instagram. Other dancers are going to see it." It's just great to have that.
So where do you, what's your vision, if you could let us all in on your 5, 10, 50-year vision for what you're doing in the dancer movement? What do you see it evolving into?
I would like to be getting dance in as many places as possible, which I think would realistically mean almost kind of like a coaching faculty, like a program where I'm teaching people how to do what I'm doing, so that you can't have a dance teacher in every space all over the world. But I think if we're giving people the tools, whether it's in these nonprofits where they're doing active things or in schools, if a teacher knows how to play a movement game in their second grade classroom, then they can have that movement experience with their kids whenever they need to. So I really see it like reaching as many people as possible by kind of training people on how to approach movement and do it in a fun and safe way.
So, from a day-to-day perspective, as you are doing all the things you need to do as a business owner and getting to do some of the fun things that you like to do, what does a typical day look like for you when you're running a business like this?
I still work as a movement specialist in an early childhood center. So I'm usually up, like today I was up writing a business proposal, doing work in the morning. I go there and I teach anywhere from 4 to 7 dance classes. Sometimes I teach in after school programs, and then usually it's coming home and doing all the boring stuff, which is marketing and networking and sending out emails and just trying to get our message out there. We teach our virtual adaptive classes on the weekends. So on the weekends, I'm teaching adaptive dance to people with disabilities on Zoom. I do it from our apartment. They're busy.
Yeah. And so are people cool with the whole Zoom thing? Do they get into it, or just is it hard to start to get into?
I wanted to move away from it as soon as COVID was over, and then our clientele base was not local because they didn't have to be. And I actually discovered that there are so many factors that people who are non-disabled don't think of, especially in New York City, that whenever I tried to host an in-person class, 30% of the participants would show up because the elevator was out at their subway station, or the elevator was out at their building, or it was raining, and it's really hard to wheel a wheelchair and hold an umbrella, and that's just not happening. And so we got better, like turnover rates on Zoom because there's nothing more accessible than the spot they're already in. And so while I don't love it for the connection of a movement class, it actually, for people with disabilities, tends to be the most accessible space to do it.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And the COVID virtual world thing has impacted everybody that way. There's not a business that hasn't been impacted, that folks aren't necessarily getting back together in person to do business or do something fun together. So what kind of advice would you give someone in your shoes, maybe not specifically putting together a business such as yours, but maybe starting a business or, you know, any endeavor really, that they're starting at, you know, the first step?
I would say, don't be afraid to ask the questions, even when they're dumb, because you learn a lot of people don't know the answers. They're just making it up. And that makes me feel better. And to just be ready to adapt, to like know that the mission or whatever you feel so passionate about is going to change to some degree. And that's okay.
Yeah, that's a great message. And I think when you look at successful people in any kind of realm, that's the way they think. They're just like, they got this big goal somewhere down the road, and everything in between is just, you know, adapt, be flexible, keep moving forward.
Yeah.
You have a tremendous story and a tremendous business, and we wish you all the success in the world. And anybody could go to thedancermovement.com, right? And they could learn all about everything that you do. Anything else you want to share with everybody about the business?
I always sign off my emails. Just keep dancing.
Just keep dancing. Well, thank you so much for joining the show. And thank you all for listening in to the Charge Forward podcast. Visit chargeforwardcoaching.com to see more podcasts. Go to YouTube and all that stuff and subscribe. And we will catch you on the next show.